Our meditation today is going to be based on a part of a sermon that was preached here in September by Reverend Philip Hewitt. How many of you were here when Reverend Hewitt preached on Ingathering Sunday? All right. This sermon was called Forever Felt in the Soul. When I listened to it later on the website, I was struck by the image of spiritual community that Reverend Hewitt presented in this quotation by theologian Martin Buber. Buber says, "A community of faith exists only when it is a community of work. The real essence of community is to be found in the fact, manifest or otherwise, that it has a center. The real beginning of a community is when its members have a common relation to the center, overriding all other relations. The circle is described by the radii, not by the points along its circumference. And the originality of the center cannot be discerned unless it is discerned as being transpicuous to the light of something divine." Reverend Hewitt restates the point. We can join hands around a circle and feel we have community. But what is really important is what is in the center of that circle, the light of something divine. How you see that light, or what you call it, varies from person to person. Some call it the mystery or spirit of life. Reverend Hewitt says he uses the word ineffable. It is something that connects us, something that can strengthen and empower us. Note that it need not be supernatural to be powerful. When I am in my more humanist or atheist modes, I think of it as a sense of connection with the web of life, or the power of love, or a still small voice within. Its power comes in part in its ability to go by all these different names, to take on what you need it to take on. You may recall that Reverend Hewitt described a meditation room at the United Nations building in New York that was designed to evoke communion with the ineffable. At the center of the room is simply a block of stone. Hewitt quotes what Dag Hammarskjöld said about the UN meditation room. "There is an ancient saying that the sense of a vessel is not in its shell, but in the void. So it is with this room. It is for those who come here to fill the void with what they find in their center of stillness." I'm intrigued by these images. A circle of people gathered around the ineffable, each bringing to the light that which stirs in their own souls. I'd like to invite us to use these images and our imaginations in our meditation today. Breathe in, breathe out. If you feel comfortable doing so, close your eyes. Keep breathing deeply. We all came here today from the busyness of our own very full lives. We carried here with us a myriad of feelings, joy, love, and gratitude, also sorrow, anxiety, discontent. Perhaps, too, some feelings we can't quite identify. To the extent that you are able, I invite you to open your mind, open your heart, and imagine. Imagine all of us holding hands in a big circle. You can picture us here in the sanctuary or perhaps out on the grass in front. We are holding hands in a circle. There is something in the center of our circle that unites us. It is that which has called us to be here. It connects us to one another. Some of us feel it more strongly than others. Some of us hardly feel it at all, and yet here we are, gathered around it. We each have different names for it. Power of love, web of life, a common call to care for the world. Some of us don't know what to call it. For now, as you feel comfortable, imagine it as a light in the center of our circle. Consider what you are holding in your heart, the feelings and concerns that you brought with you into this room today. Imagine yourself holding those things in your hands, then stretching your cupped hands out toward the light at the center of the circle. Here, you say, I brought here my joy, my sadness. Or, here are my frustrations, my worries. Or perhaps you say, I have no idea what I'm feeling. I have brought here myself. Here I am. Let us sit together in silence for a while, then remain seated with our eyes closed as we listen to the meditation continue in music. Take this time to sit in communion with the light in the center of our circle. Be open to whatever interchange you imagine might follow. not alone. We are all held in a larger interconnected whole. Mindful that each person here carries their own burdens, concerns, and heartaches, let us be gentle with one another, and let us work together to bring compassion to the larger world. Blessed be. I watched your choir concert over the internet, and I got to say, you're so much better in person. It's so great to see you in person. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Braden. Thank you, choir. As many of you have heard, August was a rough month for our family. A week after my partner, your co-minister, Reverend Shauna, gave birth to our baby boy, he underwent open heart surgery, and the surgery did not go well. He's okay now, but there was a week or so during which we were not sure he would survive. In the midst of my fear, I reached out to friends, many of whom I had not been in touch with for quite a while. I told them what was happening with us, and I learned what had been happening with them. I was struck by how much stuff had transpired. Not just birthdays and vacations, but big deal life-altering stuff. In 1 year of my life, I had struggled with my mother's cancer diagnosis and the anxiety of almost losing a baby. During the same time frame, our friends had been going through stuff too. Ovarian cancer, with its accompanying chemotherapy, hair loss, and uncertain long-term prognosis, befell a friend of ours who is only 50, a working mom with a daughter who just started college. One couple we know was struggling to rebuild their marriage after a devastating betrayal. It was one of those couples that you thought had a perfect relationship, smart, compassionate, good people with great communication skills. Everyone, including the couple, was wondering, how could this happen? Another friend was grappling with the death of her father, a loss made all the more complex by the fact that the Alzheimer's had taken away the person she knew as her dad a long time ago. Several of our friends were struggling with fertility issues, including the sorrow of miscarriage, one of which happened at 22 weeks. 5 months into the pregnancy, long past the tentative hope and well into the joyful planning, they lost their baby girl. A dad of a 6-year-old friend of our daughter's was diagnosed with prostate cancer. They caught it early, but it was scary for a while there for the whole family. It wasn't all bad stuff. Some of it was just big stuff. One friend quit his job and took a cross-continental road trip with his 2 dogs, a midlife evaluation. Another younger friend of ours who was adopted as a baby was getting ready to meet with her birth mother in person. A lot can happen in a short amount of time. So it has been with you as well. While Reverend Shauna and I have been away on parental leave, I have no doubt that each of your own individual lives have been full. Take a moment to think about what events have touched your own life over the past several months. What sorts of issues occupied your mind and heart through the summer and then through the fall? What's been happening with your family and friends, your work, your projects? What's been happening with you? In addition to the things that have affected your individual lives, as a community, your lives have also been touched by some significant events. Since the summer, there have been 2 weddings. Congrats to Lily and Steven, and Bruce and Mariko. There were also 4 deaths. Our community lost Dennis Jones, Sangha Sterling, Dick Bocking, and Jerry Pollock. No matter how much I tell myself that death is a part of life, a natural part of nature's cycle, each time someone I know, someone I love, dies, my heart skips a beat and my breath catches for a moment. I feel a little shocked. They were here and now they're not. Dennis, Jerry, Dick, and Sangha. We will miss them. Life just doesn't stand still. Stability is an illusion, and our spiritual challenge is to figure out how to adjust to the changes as gracefully as possible. I said spiritual challenge. Perhaps you noticed that the subtitle of this sermon is Growing in Spirit, and the title before the colon is Living Our Mission. Our congregation's mission, what we come here for, which we read earlier this morning, has 4 major themes: growing in spirit, supporting one another in community, seeking enrichment through diversity, and helping to heal the world. Over the next 4 years, Reverend Sean and I thought we might align our preaching with a different mission theme in turn. Next year, starting fall 2013, we're thinking of concentrating on enrichment through diversity, which will go nicely with some continental work Unitarian Universalist ministers will be doing on the issue of race and diversity. For the rest of this church year, now through June, Reverend Sean and I will focus on growing in spirit. At least 1 sermon per month will relate to this preaching theme. We will kick it off with a slate of January sermons on spiritual practices, and then we will look at how spiritual growth might intersect with our other mission themes. spiritual growth through supporting one another in community, seeking enrichment through diversity as spiritual practice, growing in spirit through helping to heal the world. I will also lead a class called Spirit in Practice on Tuesday nights in February through May. Check your January newsletter for details. We ministers love to use that word, don't we? Spiritual. I used it 7 times in the last paragraph. How are the humanists out there doing? Eyes glazing over, or perhaps rolling in derision. You may recall that I preached a sermon last year especially for you eye rollers. It was the one called, "What Does Spirituality Even Mean?" And I'm delighted to report that my wife will be preaching a sermon in March with the working title, Spirituality for Atheists. I believe Faye suggested that title. As I've told you before, my own belief in a God force, in anything beyond what I can see, is shaky, often non-existent. So I developed a way to talk about spirituality that does not require a belief in anything supernatural. It is a definition of spirituality that works for me even when I am at my most skeptical, one that is grounded in the rational, scientific fact of our sociological and ecological interdependence. For me, spirituality is a felt sense of our interconnection with something larger than the self. Sometimes I think of that something as a God force, but more often I think of it as a power of love or simply the web of life. I am a better person, the person I want to be, when I feel connected to something larger than myself, whether that is human community or the interdependent web of life. But I can't feel it on cue. I can't summon that spirit-lifting sense of interconnection just because I want to. So I pursue practices that help me access that feeling. Spiritual practices, like attention, gratitude, and compassion. Recall Buber's image of community that we used in our meditation. The circle of people linking hands, united by their common relationship to the center. Reverend Hewitt says that spiritual growth could be considered a journey toward that center. As we focus on growing in spirit this church year, I wonder what that would look like for each of you. Some of you have already done tons of spiritual growth over the years with meditation or yoga, communing with nature, your own personal centering practices. Wherever you are right now in your growth, what would the next step be for you? What are you working on? What would you like to be working on? What does your spirit need at this point in your life? Here's another way to consider the question. If you imagine us all gathered around that circle, a center of interconnection, call it what you will, the power of love, web of life, God force of some sort, or simply light. How do you align yourself with that light, the mystery, the still small voice within, so that you can become the person you want to be, so that you can act in the world as the best self you enjoy being? Let's try this for a moment. As you feel comfortable doing so, close your eyes again. Take a deep breath in and out. Imagine again all of us in a big circle. For this exercise, let's imagine the ineffable center as a light that can go by many names. What does the light look like to you? What does it feel like? In the days, weeks, and months ahead, how do you want to grow in relationship with that center? What would it be like if you felt the light within you with more frequency? If it is an appealing thought, imagine the light shining within you as you go about your business in the days and weeks ahead. What would that be like? What would you be like? All right, come on back. To be honest, that light does not shine out from within me at all times. My spiritual growth is much more halting than that. I've made some progress recently, though, especially over this past year. I asked you earlier to consider your own particular spiritual challenges. You may remember some of mine. I tend to worry about the future, which prevents me from appreciating the present. Also, especially when I am anxious, I can tend toward wanting to control things. Worry and control both go with postures like this, clenched fists, furrowed brow. It's the opposite of the relaxed, open-hearted, open-armed posture that would let that light shine through me. So I've spent a lot of time dwelling in worry and control. But this past year, life forced me to let go. I mentioned earlier my mom's cancer diagnosis, fallopian tube cancer. You know how this roller coaster goes. First, there's the worry of the biopsy. Then you're hit with the diagnosis. Then there's the surgery. We thought the results were good. Then we found out that it was not stage one, as we'd been told, but stage three, 40% chance of survival. Then the chemo. My mom's chemo landed her in ICU with a bad kind of pneumonia. They considered medically inducing a coma. It was terrifying. I was not, I am not, ready to lose my mother. Slowly, she got better. Finished chemo, hair growing back, energy and taste buds restored to normal. But we still live in the uncertainty. They have no statistics for the kind of chemo they used on her kind of cancer. We live from 3-month check to 3-month check. That experience overlapped last year with the roller coaster ride that was my partner's pregnancy. First, the blood tests indicated that she was indeed pregnant. Yay! Then there is concern about HCG levels not doubling the way they should. When we go in for the first ultrasound, the fertility doctor looks at us and says, "I'm so sorry, guys. There's an embryonic sac, but it's empty." I mentally plan for the miscarriage, but the doctor tells us to keep taking the medications because, quote, stranger things have happened. Then at the next appointment, lo and behold, there is a heartbeat. What? It continued like that, up and down and up and down. I don't even remember all of the details. The fetus was too small. The tests indicated birth defects, some of which might be incompatible with life. At one point, when given the 3 or 4 possibilities of what the baby could have, we were actually rooting for the heart defect. And yay, we won. We got the heart defect. Then there were concerns that the placenta would not make it to term. At some point last spring, I let go. I had been going up and down and up and down between hope and despair so many times, I felt like I was getting spiritual emotional whiplash. My letting go was not really a conscious decision. It was like my body revolted. Stop! Enough! I can't take it. No more worrying about and planning for every worst case scenario. All we know is what is true now. Stay in the now. We will deal with what comes later when it comes. I had paved the way for this shift with conversations with my mother. She and I had been talking about practicing living in the present and appreciating what we could about what was good right now. I was inspired by how my mother and stepfather both practiced this approach. Facing death moved them both to enjoy life. From simple things like good food and walks in nature, to more substantial things like connections with friends, family, and community. Also just fun things. My mother has always loved tulips, so when they were at a professional meeting in Europe, they took a side trip to visit the tulip fields near Amsterdam. Be here now. Appreciate what you can. I tried to follow suit. The uncertainty about whether this second child would come into being helped me open me to appreciating the living child we already had. It is easy to get caught up in the busyness of raising a kid, the juggling of schedules, the battles over vegetable eating and coat wearing, the perpetual self-regeneration of clutter. I was able to take a breath, appreciate the miracle of this healthy little being, and enjoy watching her grow into herself. And then I'd go back to fighting with her about broccoli. But continuing on the theme of appreciation, I also found myself stopping more often to appreciate out loud how lucky I felt to be living in this beautiful city of Victoria. The mountain views, the beaches, the flowers, the sweet small town traditions like the Oak Bay Tea Party Parade. How cute is that? And this summer, I was deeply grateful that my mother was well enough to come and stay with our daughter in our house in Victoria while we were at the hospital with the baby in Vancouver. The previous summer, we were not sure if my mom would make it a whole year, and we still don't know how many more summers she will be with us, but thank you, universe, for that summer. It was such a gift to have two of the people I love most in the world, my mother and my daughter, spending that good quality time together, playing ball in the yard, learning how to sew, doing little indoor crafts, watching Word Girl, the PBS show about the vocabulary superhero from the planet Lexicon. Some of you know her. Those two spiritual practices, being present in the here and now and appreciating what I can about what is good, attention and gratitude, helped prepare me to handle the hard stuff of this summer. It's like I had laid some groundwork with this new mode of being that helped me endure and helped me to be present and supportive of Shauna as well. In those horrible days when we were not sure if our son was going to survive his heart surgery, I was neither over-controlling nor spinning in circles planning for worst-case scenarios. I was just present. Sad, scared, but present with love. There was another spiritual practice that helped get me through the despair and fear, reaching out to friends and family. It's funny, here I am a minister, and when hard stuff was happening, did I pray? Did I even meditate? No. There was the occasional desperate, please God, let him live. But that was it. No rosary, no hours on bended knee, no chanting om or sitting on silence on a meditation cushion. In fact, when the social worker mentioned the availability of a hospital chaplain, I nodded politely and with instant clarity knew I would not follow up on that. My own reaction surprised me, but I was too tired at the time to analyze it or puzzle through whether I should reconsider. I just did what I was moved to do, what came naturally. I reached out to my friends. I called some, I texted others. When the surgery day came and we were waiting and waiting and waiting, hours past the time they said it would be over, I wrote an email to my closest friends, the ones who had seen me through thick and thin, who had signed the community covenant at our wedding, the people I trusted with my vulnerable self. It was me reaching out to the universe for connection, to be held in love through this hard, hard time. My friends responded, and I continued to email back and forth with each of them throughout the difficult week that followed. I don't know if it counted as a spiritual practice, but it was a practice that was good for my spirit. It strengthened within me a more concrete felt connection with the web of life. There were others that held us in the web. Reverend Shauna and I were surprised and deeply moved by how many of you took our situation to heart. We were so touched to hear that folks had been tracking the due date and then tracking the surgery date, that folks were even stopping by church to ask if anyone had heard how it went and were worried when the updates were not forthcoming. In cards and emails, so many of you let us know that you were pulling for us, even praying for us. In those days when everything was so uncertain, it meant a lot to us that you were out there, our beloved congregation holding us in your hearts and wishing us well. You embodied that light that helped hold us through a very difficult time. Your care was a tremendous gift to us. Thank you. I'd like to return the favor. I think there's something powerful about holding the concerns of others in our own hearts. It somehow strengthens our ties to that circle and to the light inside the circle. As I mentioned, January's worship services will all be about spiritual practices that sustain us. Reverend Shauna will preach a sermon on music and a sermon on movement. I get to preach a sermon on prayer and meditation. In preparation for that sermon, I'm going to attempt to undertake a daily prayer practice. Here's my idea. Between now and January 6th, I invite you to share with me any concerns you are holding in your hearts. You can either write them on a piece of paper and hand them to me in person, or you can email them to me. My address is in your order of service. Every day, I will light a candle and prayerfully go through your concerns one by one, holding you in my heart, wishing for you whatever it is you need to get through what you face. Even if you are a secular humanist, I encourage you to try this. You can tell people, my atheist minister is praying for me. Technically, I'm agnostic, but atheist minister sounds better, right? I have also set up a candle lighting room on the internet for us. You may have seen this website. You can light a virtual candle that stays lit for 48 hours. You can attach to it your name and initials or any prayer message that you choose. I've posted a link to our church's candle lighting on our Facebook page, and I will put it in the eWeekly as well. I have paper copies with me today. If you add your name and concern to your candle, I will include you in my daily prayer ritual. A note of caution, if you want to have a pastoral conversation with me, tell me that directly in a separate communication. Please don't use the candle lighting prayer ritual as a way to indirectly tell me you'd like a call. I won't pick up on that. If you would like a pastoral conversation with me, tell me directly. Call me on my cell phone. So think about it. What concerns are weighing on you this winter season? What do you need to get through it? Let me know, and I will hold you in the light. The sermon has been a bit all over the map. Perhaps it's sleep deprivation. I'll do a quick summary. Living our mission. This year we focus on spiritual growth. Life is full of stuff, some of it very hard stuff. In the face of your life stuff, I ask you to consider, what are your spiritual needs and challenges? What would spiritual growth look like to you? What helps you to adapt to life's changes with open heart and open hands? I shared with you the three practices through which I experienced some of my own spiritual growth: attention, gratitude, and connection with others. Building on connection with others, I told you about my plan for a daily prayer ritual and foreshadowed my sermon on prayer and meditation. I like the idea that spiritual growth is a journey toward the light at the center of our circle. I find that spiritual practices bring me closer to that light. Sometimes, like when many of you were thinking of and praying for our family in August, I felt like that light was tangible. I could feel it. That ineffable that dwells at the center of our circle, I could feel it. And it held me up. It underscores for me that our church community has the potential to be that circle that embodies the light. I'll close with that vision. We join hands around the circle, invite the light to dwell within us, and hold one another through life's ups and downs while caring for the larger world together. So may it be.